You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
So the 2019 election has finally come to an end. 23rd of May was counting day and the expected result came to pass. Narendra Modi was elected Prime Minister for a second five-year term by a landslide, while the opposition was, well, how do I put this delicately, decimated. That's delicate. As of my saying this, the BJP has won 303 seats. The Lok Sabha comprises 545 seats, where two are nominated by the President of India and 543 go to the polls. In 2019, the Saffron Party will now have over 300 of its own MPs in the 17th Lok Sabha, and the NDA coalition is likely to have upwards of 350 Lok Sabha seats. The Congress Party has improved on its 2014 performance of 44 by 18%, meaning they now will have 52 Lok Sabha seats. The UPA coalition, who many quarters thought would hand the incumbent a humiliating defeat, won a total of 92 seats. Now, all of that talk was before, but after the exit polls, it was kind of understood that the NDA was returning. 92 seats, though, is still underwhelming by any stretch of the imagination, given the hype until the exit poll day. It's a story for another day that a large chunk of Indian news media seemed to have been blindsided by the swell of support that Modi had across the country, especially in states like Karnataka, Madhya Pradesh and Rajasthan, which handed the Congress resounding wins only a few months ago. We will learn more over the coming weeks, seeing as this election will be passed till the, well, cows come home. Today, however, we will talk about those numbers that we just spoke about. How is the counting of votes done in India in the first place? Now that the dust has settled, have you stopped and wondered how that is done? Well, we have the answers. And we'll also talk about the big upsets that happened on the 23rd of May that will no doubt shape India's politics in the coming years. Deve Gowda has lost in Karnataka. That is big news. And such other big news is also what we will be talking about on this edition of Digging Deeper. Counting day done. What upsets happened and what we can look forward to. My name is Rakesh Sharma and you're listening to Money Control.
The Deep Dive podcast series.
We've been hearing that 900 million Indians were eligible for voting in the long seven-phase Lok Sabha elections of 2019. The Election Commission of India claimed that voter turnout was 67.1%, the highest ever. That means nearly 604 million voters went out in the sweltering heat of April and May to cast their votes. An impressive feat by any standard. That's three times the population of Western Europe, or nearly twice the population of all of the United States. Those are big numbers. Those votes need to be counted. And here is how India goes about counting the hundreds of millions of votes cast in the general elections. The approximately 600 million or 60 crore voters cast ballots across 10 lakh booths in 29 states and 7 union territories. A parliamentary constituency has, on average, 6 to 7 assembly constituencies. For example, Telangana state has 119 assembly seats and 17 parliamentary constituencies. An assembly constituency is the fundamental unit for conducting elections and counting. The responsibility for the conduct and counting of each assembly constituency rests with the assistant returning officer. Now, we understand this, right? The basic fundamental unit is the assembly constituency, and the man in charge there is the assistant returning officer. Now, we're going to get into the nitty-gritties here for a couple of minutes, so bear with me. It's probably interesting to you as well. It was certainly interesting to me. Before counting is begun, this room storing the EVMs is opened in the presence of political parties. Who is present when counting these votes? Turns out, it's quite a large number of people. The counting staff is assigned randomly, and to ensure fairness and transparency, a counting micro-observer is also appointed. Generally, these are officials from banks or the LIC. Counting happens in the presence of the returning officer or the RO of the constituency and candidates and their agents. Each candidate can appoint up to 16 counting agents from his or her party for each place of counting. The counting agent takes care of the interests of the political party. The EC appoints its own observers to oversee the process and ensure that it happens in a transparent manner. The returning officer for the parliamentary constituency and the assistant returning officer, who is in charge of the assembly constituency, take an oath to maintain the secrecy of voting and read the oath out loud before the commencement of counting. So this is all very ritualistic. Then, and this is important given the current atmosphere, the electronic voting machines are inspected before the counting starts. This will be done in the presence of the returning officers. Now, do you get the whole ritual of this? Well, that done. The process usually starts at around 8 o'clock in the morning. Counting of votes is done through EVMs. Counting of EMs can start 30 minutes after the commencement of postal ballots counting, even if all postal ballots have not been counted. Postal ballot process is reserved for service officers, their spouses, those on polling duty, electors subject to preventive detention, etc., etc. The votes polled are stored in a machine called the control unit. A control unit has a result button. On pressing this button, the staff gets the number of votes polled in favor of every candidate sequentially. For example, the result is displayed like this. Candidate 1 votes XYZ. That takes just a few minutes. Then comes the paperwork, which is a checklist to ensure things like the machine number of the control unit tallying with the number given to political parties before polling. Next on the checklist, all the seals on the machines being intact. And then the total number of votes in the machine being equal to the number of votes written on Form 17C, which is a form given to political parties after the polling by the presiding officer, containing important details like number of votes, seals, etc. Are these boring details? I agree, these perhaps are boring details, but important nonetheless, because we are talking about the brass tacks of India's democracy. Generally, 2 to 3 rounds are done every hour, so it takes 6 to 7 hours to complete the counting of one assembly constituency. At the end of each round of counting, the results from 14 EVMs are declared. After the completion of counting, one polling station is selected randomly by the political parties, and the counting of VVPAT slips are done for that polling station. Counting of VVPAT slips is a time-consuming process and easily takes 1 hour per station. Now, we've heard a lot of talk about this thing called VVPAT. Let's look at that very quickly to dispel any problems or doubts you might have about this VVPAT situation. Now, VVPAT stands for Voter Verified Paper Audit Trail, VVPAT. This system generates a printed paper slip bearing the name and election symbol of the candidate. You might have seen this when you went into a booth yourself, you made your choice, and then out popped a paper. That is your VVPAT. On the 8th of April this year, the Supreme Court instructed the Election Commission that printed VVPAT slips from randomly selected 5 polling stations in each assembly segment of a parliamentary constituency should be matched with the electronic voting machines. Now, what that means is VVPAT paper slips need to be matched for about 25 to 50 machines for each parliamentary constituency. This process requires personal supervision of the returning officer or the assistant returning officer. The Election Commission decided that the counting of 5 VVPATs will be done sequentially. The returning officer can declare the final result for the constituency after the VVPAT matching process has been completed. As Bhavesh Mishra, the current assistant returning officer of Bhadrachalam Assembly constituency, wrote, and I quote, "Getting results takes only 10% time. The rest of the 90% of the time is devoted to making counting process free from bias, leaving not even an iota of doubt regarding the electoral process." The Election Commission undertakes a 3-level check on EVM VVPATs prior to elections, once by slip verification during the first level check. In the second level, if you will, 5% of the electronic voting machines are selected at random and subjected to higher scrutiny through a mock poll, along with slip verification of 1,200 votes for 1%, 1,000 votes for 2%, and 500 votes for 2% of the EVMs. EVMs and VVPATs are then subjected to a second mock poll, along with verification of slips during the setting of candidates on the EVMs in the presence of candidates or their representatives. And then a third mock poll is undertaken with slips verification of at least 50 votes on EVMs and VVPATs on the day of the election in the presence of polling agents. That's a lot of checks and balances, which is why counting sometimes goes on well into the night. As you saw yourself yesterday, you were glued to the television and the trend started coming in. As early as about 90 minutes, things were already clear, but the actual results went late into the night because all of this needs to take place. It's a fairly rigorous process of counting. The returning officer then declares the result when he or she is certain that counting has been successfully completed. Now that you know how India's electoral democracy works, let's also find out what big events took place in this edition of the 2019 elections. No one expected this election, by the way, to be a wave election. All reports had suggested either a close contest or a big upset by Rahul Gandhi or the mythical Mahagathbandhan. So it came as a surprise when the results were to the contrary. The upset win included many upsets at the constituency level. Now let's count some of the biggest surprises. Number one, and definitely one of the loudest surprises we received this time round, was Smriti Irani beating Rahul Gandhi. The biggest upset of 2019 was Congress Party President Rahul Gandhi losing to Smriti Irani on family turf, Amethi. Rahul Gandhi conceded defeat to Irani in a press conference even before the final results were announced. At the time, Smriti Irani was leading Rahul Gandhi by over 25,000 votes, but her eventual victory margin was as much as 50,000 votes. This defeat means Rahul Gandhi will now represent the constituency of Wayanad in Kerala, where he won by a record 8 lakh votes. Importantly, Amethi passes into the hands of a non-Gandhi family MP after nearly 40 years. After her win, Smriti Irani, ever the firebrand, posted a Game of Thrones meme on Instagram which read, "The North remembers." Very subtle there. Next on the list of big upsets, one of the members of the close coterie of Rahul Gandhi, Jyotiraditya Sindhya. Now, Jyotiraditya Sindhya's loss was a bit unexpected. Guna constituency of Madhya Pradesh has historically belonged to the Sindhya family. In a big upset, the scion of the erstwhile Gwalior royal family, Jyotiraditya Sindhya, lost by over 1 lakh votes to Dr. K.P. Yadav of the BJP. Twitter had a photo going viral today with claims that Yadav had once asked Sindhya to pose for a selfie but was snubbed rudely. And now he has defeated him by 1 lakh votes, say the ones who see poetic justice in this win. Whatever the provenance of that story, the upset will definitely rankle the Congress party, given that Sindhya is a regular cohort of Rahul Gandhi's. And we head to the north, Mehbooba Mufti. Another upset was in the Vale of Kashmir. Mehbooba Mufti, the former chief minister of Jammu and Kashmir, lost from Anantnag constituency in spectacular fashion. Mufti came in third behind National Conference's Hasnain Masoodi and Ghulam Ahmed Mir of the Congress. In 2014, Mehbooba won the Anantnag constituency, defeating National Conference's Mehboob Beg by 65,417 votes. Beg later defected to the People's Democratic Party, that's the PDP, and is now one of her closest aides. Mehbooba resigned the seat in 2016 when she became the chief minister after the demise of her father, Mufti Mohammad Saeed. According to DNA, Mufti took her biggest political gamble when she jumped into the fray from Anantnag constituency at a time when her party's stock is down, thanks to the 2016 unrest and the disastrous alliance with the Bharatiya Janata Party. So Mehbooba Mufti, another huge upset. Closer home to me, I simply cannot believe it still, H.D. Devegowda. What a massive upset. If you know anything about Karnataka's politics, you will know how unbeatable Devegowda has been over the years. However, in the year of the giant slayers, if you're still sticking to the metaphors of Game of Thrones, the former Prime Minister and the current chief of Janata Dal Secular, H.D. Devegowda, lost from the constituency of Tumkur to the BJP's G.S. Basavaraju. The 86-year-old who became popular as the Mannina Maga, or the son of the soil, has won 7 terms as a legislator since 1962 and 6 terms as a member of parliament since 1991, including one stint as chief minister of Karnataka. Thursday was only the third time that Devegowda has lost an election. Devegowda gave up his bastion Hasan for his grandson Prajwal Revanna and contested from neighbouring Tumkur. Wrong move, as it turns out. He lost to the little-known Basavaraju of BJP by just 20,000 votes. It could be the end of the road for H.D. Devegowda, and a big chapter has certainly ended in Karnataka's politics. He will be 91 by the time the next election rolls into town. That is perhaps why his party's only Lok Sabha member and grandson Prajwal Revanna decided to resign his Hasan seat to make way for his return to Hasan as an elected member. A grandson resigns for the doyen to remain relevant. If that is not an upset, what else is? Digvijay Singh. This is the interesting story at play here. Digvijay Singh, a former chief minister of Madhya Pradesh, garnered a large amount of infamy for participating in an event back during the UPA years. He was photographed at the launch of a book called 2611 RSS Ki Saazish. Understandably, that did not go down well with many people. He lost to Sadhvi Pragya, as she calls herself, or as we call her, Pragya Thakur, the BJP candidate from Bhopal, a rather colourful character if you've been following the news, or even if you've been living under a rock, you would have heard about her. Pragya was one of the main accused in the Malegaon blast in 2008 and spent 9 years in prison. The special NIA court is yet to discharge her in that specific case. Though the court dropped provisions of the MCOCA, that is the Maharashtra Control of Organized Crime Act, against her, she is still being tried under the Unlawful Activities Prevention Act, that is UAPA. She was granted bail by the Bombay High Court last year. She defeated Digvijay by a huge margin of 3,64,822 votes in the Bhopal Lok Sabha seat. In a high-voltage campaign, the BJP President Amit Shah termed Sadhvi Pragya's candidature as a satyagrah against the Congress's alleged conspiracy of defaming Hindu religion by coining the term Hindu terror. Of course, Modi has also come out and said that what she said in relation to Nathuram Godse and calling him a patriot was a huge insult to the country and that he was not ready to forgive her. But she's now won a victory. The tune might now change after all. All things considered, the 2019 election has been a revelatory experience. 600 million voters, bombastic campaigns, seven phases, controversies about EVMs, and massive reversal in fortunes for old school politicians. One can truly say that India's politics will never be the same again. Do write into us, mcpodcast@nw18.com. Until the next time you hear from me, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, saying thank you for joining us, and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This has been a Digging Deeper podcast, and you have been listening to Money Control.